Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Hospitals in Thessaloniki, Greece's second largest city and the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in Greece, are being pushed to a breaking point. Some are at capacity or near capacity, and ICU units are filling up at an alarming rate. Iliana Magra, a journalist with Kathimerini, who spoke to doctors and medical professionals on the front lines in Thessaloniki, joins us to share their stories. Iliana, welcome to The Greek Current. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Thessaloniki has become Greece's Bergamo. That's what an ICU director told you for your article. For our listeners, Bergamo is a city in Italy that was at the epicenter of the pandemic during the first wave. Can you start off by giving us an overview of what the broader situation is in Thessaloniki?
Sure. As you said, Thessaloniki's hospitals have now been pushed to a breaking point, which is something that no one really expected would happen, or that it would happen so quickly and at such an alarming rate. So, for example, yesterday, the government announced that it had appropriated two private health clinics in Thessaloniki. A day before, they had given them an ultimatum saying that they need 200 hospital beds, non-ICU, but still for COVID patients. And then the Association of Private Clinics in Greece said that they didn't want to mix COVID and non-COVID patients, but the government moved on with appropriating the clinics, which shows that they're really running out of beds. For example, most general hospitals in Thessaloniki have doubled their ICU beds, even creating intensive care beds in surgery rooms, which the ICU director of one of the biggest hospitals in Greece in general, which is in Thessaloniki, AHEPA, said that has only been done during war times before. So it's a completely unprecedented situation. And their problem is not just that they're running out of beds or that they need equipment, some of which they have because of donations from the first wave, but it's that they don't have enough staff. Obviously, in order to create a new ICU, you need trained medical professionals, and there are not enough intensive care specialists in Greece, and in Thessaloniki in particular, who will be able to work at these intensive care units that are being created. And some of the doctors and the nurses and medical professionals in general are also contracting the virus. Some have also died. Not a lot, thank God, but some are falling sick. So they're overworked, they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough beds. And an ICU director of another general hospital in Greece, Agios Dimitrios, was telling me in the context of this story 2 days ago that they're creating three new intensive care beds at the hospital, but they're looking for staff. And she said, quote, 3, 4, 5 people wherever they have been left over in other hospitals across northern Greece. Some nurses now volunteered to come to Thessaloniki to work at one other general hospital there, Ippokratio, because they're really running out of staff. The situation was completely unprecedented, and they described it as tragic.
Yeah, we also saw calls from the health ministry that urged people, if they could, to help Thessaloniki. And we've seen an ever-increasing number of nurses and other national health system hospital staff in areas that haven't been overwhelmed by the coronavirus respond. Iliana, I want to turn us to the doctors that are on the front lines and their stories. They're saying that they're largely overworked, understaffed, and at times underprepared for what they have to encounter. Can you give our listeners a sense of the daily challenges that they describe to you? Are there any of their stories that you heard that you found particularly moving?
The problem is that because they don't have enough staff, you have doctors of any and all specialties helping with the situation. For example, one trainee doctor in a non-pathological specialty said that she's completely out of her depth. She's not in an ICU, but still, even when she has to care for patients who have tested positive with COVID-19 and are hospitalized, she feels that she's inadequate because she doesn't really know what to do. Another trainee doctor whose specialty is general surgery said that he doesn't even remember the basics of pathology because it's been years and years since he studied it at university, and they said that they felt that there wasn't a plan on a state level for all those trainee doctors who are not in their specialty at the moment and they're helping out with COVID patients. And that they feel that because everyone was expecting a second wave, and even if not under these dire circumstances in Thessaloniki in particular, that they could have received more substantial training from the health ministry, for example. And on a daily basis, not just the trainee doctors, even the ICU directors who have been working as intensive care specialists for their whole lives, they said that they feel completely stressed every day, mostly because they're not sure if they will have beds to accommodate the incoming patients. But they also said that it's very tough because COVID-19 is creating a pneumonia unlike any they've ever seen. One of the trainee doctors also mentioned that you have patients who they're not in ICU, but one, for example, got so stressed that he took off his mask and he wanted to jump outside the window. And then they called in a psychiatrist and they had to tie him down, basically, in order to calm him down. And then she said that at another time, they went in the ward for the morning round with a specialist doctor and they saw that two patients died. And she's like, after every night shift, I drive home and I'm just crying because of the stress and the pressure.
You also note in your article that three ICU directors told you that compared to the first wave, most patients are now between the ages of 40 and 60 years old, while one said that they had even intubated relatively young people without any underlying health issues. Is this something that's sinking in with Greeks?
Not necessarily, because I was reading at the reactions to my article as well, and it seems like a lot of people still do not believe that the situation is as urgent as medical professionals are describing it. And what the ICU directors were saying is that during the first wave, they were all scared because they didn't want to contract it either, but the patients, especially the ones who were intubated, were overwhelmingly way older. And now, as you said, they're between the ages of 40 and 60. They have even younger patients. But it seems like a lot of Greeks, I wouldn't say most of the country necessarily, because it seems that people in Thessaloniki especially are more scared now because they're on the third week of lockdown and things have not really improved. But other people are thinking that, you know, if relatively young, if I don't have any underlying health issues, then I'll be fine. But what the medical professionals are describing is that people who don't smoke, people who are completely healthy, you don't know how your organism will react to COVID.
Vanna Papaevangelou, a professor of pediatric infectious diseases at Athens University, attributed this surge, despite the 2 weeks of severe restrictive measures and almost three in Thessaloniki that you just mentioned, to this relaxed behavior among members of the public, even in the middle of a lockdown. Now, the doctors that you spoke to also shared their thoughts on the people who still aren't taking this seriously or might not believe that it's as serious as it is and choose not to follow health measures. What was their message?
Basically, their message is stay home. And one ICU director said, you know, we wish we would be able to stay home too, but we can't, obviously, which didn't mean that they don't want to follow through with their duties, but that they don't even have an option, which doesn't mean at the same time that they're not scared for themselves as well, because most of them fall between the ages of 40 and 60. However, just a small comment on what they also said, where the reasons behind this extreme surge, especially in Thessaloniki. Thessaloniki, about a month and a half and 2 months ago, didn't have a lot of cases. Compared to Athens, it had way less. So people there felt more relaxed, way more relaxed than you had incoming students. And you also had a lot of priests, especially towards the end of October during a religious holiday in Thessaloniki, who didn't wear masks while they performed their services. And it seems like people in Thessaloniki didn't realize that there were a lot of positive cases among them until it was too late. And also, throughout the country, you have a lot of people who are tired of the lockdown, especially because we don't see it working as quickly as it did during the first wave. So people are, some of them are in disbelief, and others are even, you know, denying that they should wear masks. A few weeks ago, just as the lockdown in Thessaloniki had started, you had hundreds of people, about 200 or 300 of people who protested in the streets of Thessaloniki against the lockdown without really wearing masks. So you didn't have any of these, you know, small though they may be, movements against the measures during the first wave, when we had way less positive cases in the country and the public healthcare system was under less pressure.
Despite this dire situation in hospitals in Greece, particularly in Thessaloniki, as we've been discussing, are there any signs that things are beginning to stabilize or to turn a corner? Is there any data that you've seen that indicates that these lockdowns are having the desired effect?
The daily cases have been dropping a bit. It's still very slowly, and the viral load is still very high throughout the country, but especially in northern Greece. The president of the Greek Medical Association said that they don't see a stabilization of the situation yet, especially in Thessaloniki. They see a drop in the rhythm of the transmission, so that's lower now. But they think that the next week and maybe the week after will not see a stabilization or even a significant drop in cases. They think that, you know, after 2 weeks from now, we'll start seeing positive results.
Ileana, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great having you with us.
Thank you so much.
In other news, Turkey issued another nav text for the continuation of survey activities of the Oruç Reis vessel in the Eastern Mediterranean through November 29th. The nav text, which was released Saturday, reserves an area extending just beyond 6 nautical miles south of the Greek island of Kastellorizo. Greece urged Turkey to revoke its nav text and stressed that Turkey's moves undermine peace, security, and stability in the region. Meanwhile, Turkish President Erdogan called on the European Union for dialogue, adding that Turkey sees its future in the EU. Finally, a new report presented in Cyprus on Friday by the government's Health Advisory Committee showed that while Limassol and Paphos are making epidemiological progress, Nicosia and Larnaca are presenting higher rates of coronavirus transmission. Members of the government's Health Advisory Committee also said that with current measures set to expire at the end of the month, plans are currently being drawn up for what is to follow. In the meantime, Cyprus is setting new records for the number of COVID tests being carried out, with a combined total of around 12,000 per day. Experts are hopeful that this testing strategy can help avoid further lockdowns. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.